welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to yet another episode here in mid-May. And Luke, it's time for me to get a little bit agitated already about the 2023 season because Vegas has released their first run of the over-under win totals for the entire Big Ten. But today we're only going to be focusing on the Big Ten West. But Luke, honestly, what's the reason we're here today?
We're here because the good people at Home Field Apparel said, hey, you guys have a great audience. They supported us last time when we launched the Minnesota collection, and they're back again. If you're listening to this episode, the collection is probably already available. It might already be gone. It might not. But if you want to get it, Ryan, it opened on May 13th at 9 a.m.? Yes, 9 a.m. Central. And Ryan, how
Saturday at 9 a.m. for those of you who want it on simpler terms. And for those of you thinking to yourselves, what's Home Field? What are these guys talking about? They do college merch. We're talking shirts. We're talking different long sleeve offerings, new fleeces, joggers, ringer tees, children's sizes. And for those of you who don't remember, they ran a couple of Gopher collections, I think last year. And I will attest, and you can ask people and look around social media, it is some of the nicest in terms of material you're going to find at a good price point. Plus, they're all unique Gopher designs that I can probably assure you you haven't seen before.
Yeah, and they kind of have like a vintage feel, right, Ryan? So if you're trying to find something that is modern, you know, has the nice quality and, you know, that nice like 84 or 60-40 blend, but also, you know, a cool vintage design, they got you covered. So make sure you head over to Home Field Apparel, find this new Gopher collection, use the code GGR for Gopher Gridiron Radio, and save yourself 10%. Mr. Burns, we have to now transition and talk about projections.
Home improvement projects?
You literally go to Home Improvement Project. We are a football podcast. We're not a home improvement project.
Well, I mean, here's what I would say. Look, I want to give some people the updates that they don't care about because we're also human beings before I get too agitated about some of these over-unders in the Big Ten West. Did you, when you bought your home, because we're both Roseville residents, did your home have blinds?
Yeah, it did. I was fortunate enough to have blinds, yes.
So most of my house doesn't have any blinds in it. So now that, you know, we got some money from the wedding, we put that towards blinds. And let me tell you, to be able to not have my office is upstairs in the two bedroom house here. And my office here has a window that faces directly into the sun. I cannot stress to you how much cooler it is now that I have blinds in my house.
I'm so happy for you because most importantly, blinds are a good way to keep your home cool, especially if you close them. And I'm proud of you because you're probably now protecting the climate just all that much more, right? So you're able to use your air conditioner a little bit less, but knowing you and how frequently you open your windows, you're probably running your AC constantly.
It is constantly on because like I said, in the winter, I keep the house at 63. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, my wife would never let me. How do you get away with it? Number one, she loves me. Number two, she knows that I run hot constantly, and she knows that she can just put on a sweatshirt or get a blanket. I'll go run and get those things for her, but it's just – the other thing I want to complain about, my goodness. So I have a – for those of you who don't know, I have a 7-year-old English Mastiff. His name is Diesel, but we call him Lumpy. Because he's just a lumpy pile of mashed potatoes. And where I'm getting at with this is, Luke, my backyard is just a disaster from all the burn spots from the winter. And I can't stress to you how much money I've had to spend in trying to grow grass where a essentially fully grown human being has been going to the bathroom throughout the entire winter. And the type A in me, like I'm finally starting to get grass to grow there. But I don't think you understand the stress that I have with it.
I feel like you didn't realize that there's such thing as those dog rocks. You need to buy those, man.
I certainly have in the last week, and we're going to test out. Look, for those of you with normal size dogs, let's say under 90 pounds, I'm sure they work. But like the amount of supplements, or even like when we have to give him his flea and tick, like when I go to the vet to get it, I have to buy for two large dogs because they only go up to like a certain poundage. And for him to be able to even to get his flea and his heart, and it's just ridiculous, Luke. But again, that dog is more important than me in this household, so I know how it goes.
Yeah, I don't see why not. So
yeah.
All right, so the goal of today's episode is to, you know, some of the early over-unders have come in. We're going to focus on the Big Ten West. But, you know, these Vegas over-unders, it's obviously too early. Some of these rosters aren't even set, but it's kind of fun to look at. So we'll break it down. I think before we get to those over-unders and just some thoughts, Ryan, I think we have to have we have to set expectations, right? And this is probably almost certainly the last year of the Big Ten West. It's been a wild ride, and let's make sure that we enjoy this one. I don't want you to look back and have regrets on the 23 season having not enjoyed the wildness that is the Big Ten West.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that, I mean, more than likely it's going to be the last year of it, unless, again, I'm under the impression they're probably going to go to pods. Which
for yeah, 16 I think it's actually a good move, but yes, I'm with you.
But I still don't know how that will play. Like, we'll have plenty of time this time next year, because I'm sure the 2024 schedule will be out, because I'm very intrigued to see. I think many modern-day Gopher fans would say the only two games you have to protect would be the Wisconsin and Iowa games. Now, I know there's some of you that are thinking, Ryan, what about the little brown jug? Ryan, what about the governor's bell? I just think that the way that college football has evolved, I think for the casual fan and for you, even the hardcore fan, it's Wisconsin and Iowa. Like, you could protect another game to save every year, but let me ask you, Luke, I mean, I'm the hardcore nut and you're more of the, I mean, you're still hardcore, but I consider you more casual.
I'm more casual than you are. But yes.
Yeah. Would you protect another one besides Wisconsin and Iowa in a given year?
If you told me I had to pick two, I would pick Wisconsin and Iowa, no question. If I had to pick a third, this might be unpopular. I probably wouldn't pick Michigan. They haven't actually played all that much historically. Yes, they have a great trophy. I mean, I get that. But if you're looking for like an actual rivalry, I think I'm not even really who would you go with as the next rival besides Wisconsin and Iowa? I don't think it's Michigan, because it hasn't been particularly close, even though they have the trophy. I mean, they've played Illinois a ton.
I've seen some pods where like Nebraska would be included if you're Minnesota.
That's geographical though, right?
Yes, like, but that Nebraska does nothing for me.
I think in the last 10 years, Nebraska is probably a closer rival, and it's been building over time. One, because of proximity. Nebraska travels well. They have a good fan base. It's very noisy. But in general, I mean, that's recency. I don't think, I guess there's some history when Nebraska was good in the 90s as well, where they played Minnesota and crushed them. But in general, I just don't think that there is another rival per se on the level of Wisconsin and Iowa.
I agree. So whatever it is, in terms of, we'll see what next year brings. We'll have plenty of time to discuss it on this podcast. It's probably the last year of the West. And I can say this to lead in. I feel like there's four teams that have, how do I want to handicap it? I think there's four teams that have a shot. I think that there's one team and then that probably has a better shot than the three others. And it's not Wisconsin, who Vegas thinks is far and away the somehow favorite in the West, but we have plenty of time to get into that.
All right. So yeah, so let's get into this. Why don't you start with the odds and then we'll go back and forth again, probably starting, do you want to start from the top or you want to start from the bottom?
Let's start with from the bottom, which would be the Northwestern Wildcats. And so the odds we're going to be referencing released this past week, both on Caesars Sportsbook and DraftKings. Now, here in the state of Minnesota, I don't believe you can be able to bet on that. I know that the sports betting legislature is still being discussed. We'll see what they get done here. But both Caesars and DraftKings are going to be the numbers we're talking about. So the first line is Northwestern, and both Caesars and DraftKings agree. Luke, have you looked at the document yet that I sent you?
No,
I haven't. I almost want to have you guess if you haven't.
I haven't, so I'll guess.
Okay. What do you think Northwestern's over-under is? Again, these are regular season wins. So
and, this isn't not just conference. This is regular season. I'm going to go their over-under is probably 3.5.
You are spot on.
Yes. Are you serious?
That's yeah, awesome. Are at 3.5 games. Now, for those of you thinking to yourselves, how dare Vegas count Fitz out? Well, Fitz is 4-20 over the past two seasons, and I look at that roster, Luke, and I'm like, I don't see it. I don't see it because they were horrific last year.
Yeah.
Now, they have brought in a couple of transfers in the last week that'll at least give them something resembling an offense. Mm-hmm. With Cincinnati quarterback Ben Bryant, who started games for Cincy the last couple seasons, and then Michigan playmaker A.J. Henning is also coming back to the Chicagoland area. Was a receiver, punt returner for them, really good athlete. But here's where I'm at. You lose Evan Hull. You lose Peter Skoronski, your two best players on offense, and I think Bryant and Henning can certainly help them. But the offensive line is still bad, and their defense, which was a huge part of why Northwestern won the Big Ten West in the last handful of years, is still bad. But how, like 3.5's not a big number, obviously. And let me tell you, I look at the way that they open the season, Luke, and they have a puncher's chance. Okay, they open at Rutgers, which is probably the worst team in the East, and they play UTEP, Duke, and Howard. If they're going to hit the over there, they're going to have to probably start off the season hot because they have also have Penn State and Maryland. But unless you think they're going to go beat Ryan Walters and Purdue in year one, it's just. I talked about it all last season, Luke. I don't understand why Fitz isn't on the hot seat at this point. Now, if Northwestern is only winning 4 games this fall, they will certainly be, they'd be 8-28 over the last 3 seasons. But this is just a bad team for Northwestern.
I think I sent you this. I was listening to the Eyes on Big podcast. They did like a coaches ranking episode. And obviously they do good stuff. If you're looking for some, conference wide takes, right? But someone said on that pod, I don't recall who, that the class, like the senior class at Northwestern this year, never saw Northwestern win a home game against a Big Ten West opponent. Now I haven't fact checked that or anything, but like just the thought of that is like that's bad, Ryan.
I mean, Northwestern's bad. And that's where it's like Minnesota travels to Evanston in late September, which I'll be at that game and I'll probably, fingers crossed, I will say it shouldn't be the disgusting Northwestern game that every time I travel down there it is, where it's a 35 mile an hour wind coming off of Lake Michigan to the 400 fans that are in the stadium. Hopefully it's late September and decently warm. But the key for any team playing Northwestern is just going to be maybe Ben Bryant and A.J. Henning are the thing that stirs the drink for them offensively. But that defense is just – and I know the offense has been so bad that the defense just gets worn out by the midway part of the Big Ten schedule. But I just have no faith in that offense being able to score enough points to be able to win a game. But if they're going to hit the over here – they're going to have to get it done early in the season. You're going to have to not lose to UTEP, Duke, and Rutgers. So gun to your head. Well, let's not gun to your head yet. Your first impression on the 3.5, are you taking the over or the under on Northwestern?
On the 3.5, I'll probably take the over.
I think I'm going to take the under because I think Duke is decent enough. And I don't know, man. I just have no faith in that roster anymore. It's just so unathletic that it's hard for me to see them winning games right now.
For me, like Rutgers, UTEP, Duke, and Howard are all the games, you know, that they have a reasonable chance. And you just never...
You could say Purdue, too. I don't think Purdue is much to write home about, which we'll talk about next, but...
Yeah, but I'll just say, like, it's hard. I think it's hard to lose 8 games, given what they have on their schedule at the moment. But I think you're right. The roster is in a tough spot.
So that's going to bring us to Purdue, which, if you had to guess, again, we're going in numerical order here via both Caesars and DraftKings. What do you think Purdue's over under win total is?
Yeah, I still haven't looked at this. No Jeff Brohm, Ryan Walters first year. I'm going to go, I don't think they're bowl eligible. So I'm going to go 5. I was going to say 4.5, but I feel like that's too low. So I'm going to go 5.
So they are 5 even on Caesars, and they're 5.5 on DraftKings right now.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. So that feels about right. I would probably lean more towards 5 just off my gut. Here's a question with the transition. I mean, is there a roster even like finalized yet? I mean, it's probably unlikely every roster is finalized, but is it more or less finalized? Like, they've obviously had some turnover, but man, like, new coach, I got to think it's difficult.
I mean, more or less, like, I think about where Minnesota's at right now, but if you're listening to this, Minnesota may finally have their 85 set if they have a transfer corner, another one committed by the time you're listening to this. But more or less, all these rosters are set because the underclassmen portal is closed. Now, there's a couple of grad transfers here and there mixing in terms of entering their name into the portal. But to recap the offseason for Purdue, more or less, so far, no Jeff Brohm. He's now at Louisville and the NIL machine that is down there. And in his former Illinois defensive coordinator, Ryan Walters. So Purdue loses Aiden O'Connell, the longtime starter there, likely going to be replacing him with Hudson Card, who's going to be coming in from Texas. But they also lose Charlie Jones and Payne Durham, who top 2 pass catchers there for a long time. And that's where historically, and we're going to talk about this more as we continue to get into this episode, year one coaches in the Big Ten West historically have really not done very well, because there's a reason that either that coach left and they didn't leave a great roster, or now via the transfer portal, it's just not in a good spot.
Yeah,
so I understand that Hudson Card can probably provide some things for them at quarterback, but I want to see who's catching the ball yet. And then when you look at their schedule, Luke, I mean, you're looking at a non-conference of Fresno State at Virginia Tech and home against Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think all 3 of those teams have at least a pulse, if not probably going to be like slightly favored in some of these games. Like, Virginia Tech and Syracuse are nothing like that makes you think Purdue's going to run over them, at least in my mind anyway. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, you got Ohio State on the schedule yet. So, I mean, when you look at Purdue here so far, Purdue's also got Ohio State and Michigan on the schedule for crossover games, which welcome to the Minnesota part of it. But I mean, you got to end the season, you have Northwestern and Indiana. Like, if you're going to beat 5 or 5.5, those first 3 games of the season are going to tell us an awful lot.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you there. I think, like you said, first year coaches, I think it's probably now even more than ever, it's so hard to predict how good or bad they're going to be just based on the transfer portal and roster turnover and, you know, building a cohesive program. My guess is if you're going to get a first year coach team, you want to get them early rather than late, right? Because they maybe had some time. But then again, if they stack up injuries, you might want to get them late too. It's really hard to say. Ultimately, I mean, we're in kind of some uncharted territory is what I'm trying to say. And I do think that first year coaches, we just don't know what to expect. My hunch is that they might struggle more than people would expect.
But yeah, Brick Haley's also their defensive line coach, good. Which I will take the shot across the bow now every time, because I will go to my grave saying that through 6 or 7 years here of the Fleck era, there is no position group that underachieved more than that 2022 Minnesota defensive line. There's just no excuse for it. Now he's the Purdue defensive line coach. So I'm going to take the under on the 5 and 5.5. I just think that they're like, if it was at 4.5, I'd be much more inclined to think about it.
Yeah.
But 5 or 5.5 feels a little bit too tall for me and Ryan Walters in year one.
Yeah, I'll take the under as well. I think that makes sense.
All right, well, that leads us into what I think is another team in a tier by itself, a team that I think I would pick 5th in the West right now, and that's Nebraska. So what do you think that the over under is for the Nebraska Cornhuskers in year one of Matt Rhule?
I cheated. I looked at the document. Sorry.
Ah, geez. Well, it's six wins on DraftKings and it's 6.5 on Caesars. So essentially, Luke, do you think, before I tell you a little bit more about the Nebraska Cornhuskers, that Matt Rhule can finally end what I believe is the longest bowl streak, is I guess the way to put it, in Power 5 college football, where I think, Nebraska has the longest streak without getting to a bowl game, at least in the Big Ten, if not the Power 5. So is this the year Nebraska can at least go bowling?
It feels like so hard to project again. As I just stated, first-year coaches, I think it's such an unknown. There's no question he's a good coach. There's no question he's been a program builder both at Baylor and at Temple. Temple especially is a place that's not been difficult to win. It seems like no one sustains there, in large part because they jump, because it's probably so hard to win there. I think it's unlikely. That's just a hunch. I see some of, like, the fact that their quarterback that started last year, Thompson, just left. That surprised me. I know that they have a new quarterback, and that's likely why he left. But I don't know, man. It feels like the turnover and just everything, you know, getting them acclimated. I know that they've recruited well through the years. They just haven't been able to get the output, you know, during the Scott Frost era. I would bet more on them more likely next year than this year.
I like Matt Rhule, and I think he is a great fit for Nebraska. I think he's more of a no-nonsense guy, and I will forever say it's never really about talent in Nebraska. Now, why I'm very leery, I guess, on Nebraska in year one is, to your point, Casey Thompson's gone. He's going to be going to FAU, visited Auburn, and Auburn, I think, elected to take a different kid over him from Michigan State, Peyton Thorne. He's going to be going to FAU, where his former coach is. So the new starting quarterback is going to be a transfer from Georgia Tech by the name of Jeff Sims. And I know that there's a lot of people to the south of us that are very high on Jeff Sims is going to be the answer. But I look at it, Luke, and the man's got 28 career starts, which is a very healthy college sample size. He's coming from Georgia Tech. He's got a career 57% completion percentage with a 30-23 touchdown to interception ratio. Now, he's also provides quite a bit with his legs. I understand that.
You know who this sounds like, right?
Every Nebraska quarterback in the last 5 to 10 years.
I wouldn't say 10, but this absolutely 5 years. Yeah, this absolutely sounds like not Taylor Martinez. Goodness, the guy that went to Kansas State. I'm blanking on his name. He transferred.
I'm going to let you figure that one out because I'm not going to save you here on this one.
Oh my gosh, I can't think of his name.
Adrian Martinez.
Gosh, yeah. You saved me. So, I appreciate it.
Like, I understand that Matt Rhule and these coaches are probably actually good coaches, but yeah. Sims just, I don't know. He just doesn't do a ton for me. And where I have the questions and where it has been evidently clear when Minnesota has played Nebraska, at least in the Scott Frost era, is their offensive and defensive lines have not been good.
Yes.
They have the talent there, but they have not wanted any part of the physicality. And I know that Nebraska has certainly brought in some transfers on both sides on the offensive and defensive lines. I think they got a center from Arizona State there as well. But their tackles last year and the last 2 years have been arguably the worst tackles in the Big Ten in pass protection. Now, you have a mobile quarterback that can mitigate that. I understand it. But I think in year one, it's going to take a little bit of time to establish what Matt Rhule wants to do. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was just on a couple of Nebraska radio stations here this past week. Oh, good for me. And I think ESPN FPI has Minnesota winning this game 75% of the time. And then they were like, do you think that's right? And I went, no, I think probably 65%. And then I had some Husker fans hit me up and say, boy, Again, I understand they're drinking the Kool-Aid and everything, but I'm thinking to myself, you think in game one you have a better than 65% or better than 35% chance to come into Huntington Bank Stadium in year seven of the Fleck era and win? Like, could it happen? Certainly. Minnesota's got their own question marks, and we'll get to them in a bit.
Yeah.
But I just think that when you look at Nebraska's schedule, you got on the road at Minnesota to start the season, then they get to go on the road to prime time in Boulder, Colorado, to take on transfer U in this Deion Sanders Colorado Buffaloes. Now, I would argue they're probably going to be favored against Colorado, Northern Illinois, and Louisiana Tech.
Yes.
But you're not going to be favored against Michigan. And then we start to get into some toss-up games like at Illinois. I think Illinois probably wins that game. Now, I'm also more bullish on Illinois than Vegas is, and we'll get to that in a second. But you've got toss-up games like Illinois, Michigan State, Maryland. I think they're better than Northwestern and Purdue. So it comes down to, I think, the five games they'd be favored in: Colorado, NIU, Louisiana Tech, Northwestern, and Purdue. Do you think that they can win one of these toss-up games? I mean, you can throw Minnesota in the mix there as well, between Minnesota, Michigan State, and Maryland, to hit the over on 6.5. Because if they can just get to a bowl game,
yeah,
I think Nebraska fans would be elated.
Yeah, I think if I had to place a bet, I'd probably place the under on the 6.5. But I would probably, like, I think 6 is the number, more than likely there. I'm with you. I think the only games that they're probably favored in are Colorado, Northern Illinois, Louisiana Tech, and Northwestern. From there on, the rest of their...
Purdue at home, you should be favored.
I think it's a push, but okay.
Either way, like, I think 6 is a really good number for Nebraska.
Yeah.
If they can get to 6 in year one and the bowl streak, get a little bit momentum, I think that's a great year for Matt Rule.
The only other thing I would say is, with the mass defections that Michigan State's having, you don't know. Michigan State could be bad.
I am not bullish at all on Michigan State this year. Now, I also don't know what their number is off the top of my head. Michigan State's at 5.5, actually. I just looked.
Yeah, so, but that's where I'm like, you know, I just don't know. Things could still change even there. Like, they've had some late defections. You know, obviously you mentioned Peyton Thorne, but others as well. Like, they're going to look very different. And they weren't good last year.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Nebraska's in their own mini tier. Like, I think Northwestern's in a tier by themselves, and then Purdue's in a tier by themselves, and then Nebraska's in a tier by themselves. And then we get to tier two. And what I have is probably the number four team in the West right now is the Illinois Fighting Illini. Have you looked at the document to see what their over under is?
No, I didn't check that one. Boy, if Northwestern was 6, you got to think Illinois is at least 6.5.
I'm
going to go 6.5.
They're at 6.5
on both DraftKings and Caesars.
Correct.
Nice.
And I think that's an easy over for me.
You think it's an easy over? Okay. I got to look at the schedule.
So here's why I would say that. Now, I understand that. So they won 8 games last year, and they lose Chase Brown. They got a brand new quarterback. But they return, I think, their entire pass-catching core. They return most of their starters on their offensive line. But why I am so bullish on Illinois is they essentially return most of their front seven, and their front seven was already one of the best in the West, if not the best. But, like, Jerzon Newton, Keith Randolph, Kelvin Hart, Alec Bryant, Tariq Barnes, Gabe Jackus, like, that front gave Minnesota fits. Like, Newton is going to be a first-round draft pick. I think Keith Randolph is going to be a top 100 guy as well. Like, if we have learned anything, what is the recipe?
Oh, trenches.
Win the Big Ten West. It is in the trenches. Yeah. And it's a Brett Bielema-coached offensive line. And, yeah, I get Ryan Walters isn't there. They don't have the Brown safety, Chase Brown's other brother, it's going to bother me, Shannon. Sidney Brown. Oh. Sidney Brown, the safety there that was also a draft pick. Yes. They're not going to be without Witherspoon. I understand, like, the back end has some questions for Illinois. I totally get that. But if you have an elite pass rush, which I think Illinois is going to, they're going to be pretty good.
Is it?
And so that's where 6.5 to me is like a half or at least a full game too low for me.
Is it Arthur Sikowski?
No, he's actually now he's on the – it is not Arthur Sikowski. Arthur. He's actually on the coaching staff there. But, like, let me read. They took a transfer quarterback. His name escapes me. I'll look it up here in a second.
And they had a hit last year with Tommy DeVito, not Danny DeVito, Tommy DeVito at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to be a big replacement as well. Let's not overlook that.
Right. But, like, you look at their crossover games this year. They have to host Penn State. Again, I think we both agree Penn State is a really good football team. But, like, Indiana and Maryland don't scare me for Illinois.
Yeah.
They really don't. And then their other non-conference games are Toledo and FAU, which they should win. But one that I think is going to be really fun to watch is Illinois going to Kansas to take on.
Oh, sure.
I mean, that Kansas Jayhawk team is pretty decent now that their quarterback's going to be back.
Yeah.
So there are going to be opportunities for them. But you look at Purdue, home against Nebraska, at Maryland. Like, I think, and they get Wisconsin and Champaign. I'm just saying, like, this, I like Illinois at an over on the 6.5, because when you look across football and you look at, you know, how does a team win a game? If you can just cause havoc with your front seven and not allow the opposing offense to do what they want, you're going to be in every single football game. And I think we saw from their offensive coordinator that they can figure out some things offensively, especially with Isaiah Williams and that pass catching core, that if they can get something viable at quarterback, passable at quarterback, I just think that Illinois should probably be at 7.5 instead of 6.5.
Yeah, it's going to be 6 or 7 for me. I think it's unlikely they get to 8. They maybe could get to 8. So I'm torn. I'd probably bet the over on this if I had to place a bet, but 6.5 feels like a really good line for this.
I don't know. I think I'd take the strong over, because I think
you'll get the action. I think you'll absolutely get the action on this one.
All right. So we're going to skip to the next team in the tier, which we'll leave Minnesota for last, but you want to guess what Iowa's over unders at?
But we want to make the disclaimer that Minnesota's absolutely in this tier.
Yes, Minnesota's in this tier as well. We're just going to save them for the end.
Yeah.
Okay. Who is the last team in tier 2? Well, actually, it wouldn't be tier 2 because I think they should be the favorite, but Vegas does not think they're the favorite.
So what's Iowa?
Iowa's Hawkeyes over under.
8.
7.5.
No, really?
7.5 on both Caesars and DraftKings as we record this.
Really? Look, they got way better at quarterback. They found a receiver. They still might be deficient at receiver. They can always find a tight end. Like, really? 7.5?
Despite one of the worst offenses in the 21st century, they won 7 regular season games last year. So 7.5, they would have hit the under last year.
Brian Ferentz is going to get paid, man. The guy's getting like a bonus if he hits like 24 points. And it wasn't even just offensive points. It was like the whole team. Like, so seriously, 7.5?
Iowa's offseason looks like this. Spencer Petras is gone.
Yes.
Ex-Michigan quarterback Cade McNamara is in. He's, to me, I know Iowa fans think he's the savior. I just think he's a viable,
he's
average quarterback, which
he's better.
Iowa has been lacking for a long time, and he's going to be an upgrade over Petras.
Just in mobility.
I mean, just in decision-making, mobility, however you want to look at it. Now, they also just got a big portal commitment from Ohio State receiver Caleb Brown. Didn't play much as a true freshman last year, but he was a top 100 recruit. And I would argue Iowa's receiving core outside of Caleb Brown could be bottom 3, if not bottom 2, in the entire Big Ten.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't matter because they have Luke Lachey returning. They lose Sam Laporta, but they also have Eric All coming in from Michigan as well as a tight end. But they have
Phil Parker.
Well, I'm getting to it defensively. Like, you lose Jack Campbell, you lose Riley Moss. I get that. But it's still Cooper DeJean. It's still, you know, Sebastian Castro, Quinn. Like, they have plenty of things in the secondary. I think their defensive line is going to be pretty good as well. But part of why I think Iowa should be the favorite is if they can just have a viable offense, they miss Ohio State and Michigan.
Yeah.
Which, to me, Ohio State and Michigan in their own tier in terms of top 5 teams in college football. Now, we both agree Penn State, really good. We both like Penn State.
Yes.
And Iowa's got to travel to Penn State in late September. But then Iowa's other crossover games are Rutgers and your team, Michigan State.
I don't think there's a game in November, like looking at their schedule, that they won't be favored in. You could say Nebraska.
They should be favored in it. I bet you after the Penn State game, they probably should be favored in every game.
Yeah,
and that includes
probably
hosting Minnesota in Iowa City, where the Gophers haven't won. And
I was going to say Wisconsin. Yeah, I mean, we'll get to Wisconsin. They might favor Wisconsin, you know, Wisconsin there. But I was going to say Minnesota, Wisconsin, it could be kind of a push, maybe.
But you even look like September for them. Like, yeah. Utah State is a bad football team.
They've got the schedule.
Iowa State, I understand Iowa State won last year, but I am not high on that actually happening 2 years in a row. Western Michigan is an absolute disaster considering most of their good players are now on Minnesota's football team, and it's year one. Like, I think Iowa's over-under should be 8.5 instead of 7.5.
I'm with you. I'm pounding the 7.5 over on that. Like, they honestly, doesn't it feel like all they have to do is score 24 points?
And that, which for Brian Ferentz is a very tough thing to do.
But I just want to qualify that. I'm not saying offensive points. I'm saying total points. They score a lot on defense. Their special teams is elite. Like, they got to score 24 points, and I think they can win 8 games.
Right. Again, their defense, you know, is going to keep them in every single game, probably outside of maybe Penn State, which – but Michigan State doesn't scare me. Rutgers doesn't scare me. We've already talked about the rest of the Big Ten.
And the other thing too, Ryan, is they notoriously struggle early, right? And they get so much better as the year goes on. Like, okay, Penn State, that might be their toughest game of the year, but they're just going to get stronger and better, and they might be favored the last half of the season.
They have like 3 tough games in the whole schedule.
Yeah.
Because I don't consider Iowa State this year a tough game. I know it's in Ames. I know things happen in rivalry games, but it's at Penn State, traveling to Madison, and then hosting Minnesota the next week. I would also probably include Illinois in that at the end of the season. But I think it just depends upon who's healthy at that time. Because I think, again, there's going to be, unless Cade McNamara and Brian Ferentz just give Iowa the greatest show on turf, I still think it's going to be Phil Parker's defense, obviously keeping them in every game while Brian Ferentz tries to figure out how to be a competent play caller and offensive coordinator. But my large point to this is Wisconsin, we'll get to here in a second, is far and away to Vegas, the favorite in the West. I don't understand that at all because I think Iowa should be the favorite in the West. I think they're in their own mini tier above the rest of those tier two teams.
The only disclaimer like that I will put on this is when Iowa has high expectations, those are often the years they underperform.
But here's the thing. 7.5 is somehow their expectation. But
that's the thing. Maybe it's my expectations are higher for them. I feel like if Kirk Ferentz doesn't win 8 games, like Iowa City should revolt. Like, this seems on paper to be it should be their Big Ten West to win.
To me, you host Minnesota. Penn State is going to be a tough game. Going to Wisconsin is going to be a tough game. But your other tough games are all at home. Like, you get Minnesota and Illinois at home. Again, I think this line should be 8.5, not 7.5. But apparently Vegas doesn't think – I think Brian Ferentz is a dunce, and nepotism is the only reason he still has a job, which is still even a joke.
Did you see the meme where somebody had created like a fake product feature on LinkedIn that basically said, "I only have this job because of nepotism"? I so badly wanted to take that feature and paste Brian Ferentz's photo into it, but I don't have the Photoshop skills, so I didn't.
Well, I'm proud of you. So I think Luke and I agree. We both take the over on 7.5, which leads us into the last team in tier two besides Minnesota, which can you guess what Wisconsin has for an over under on Caesars and DraftKings?
Well, if Iowa is at 7.5, somebody has to be higher, and it isn't Minnesota. It's got to be Wisconsin.
Yep.
They got to be at 8.
They are at 9 wins on DraftKings.
Seriously.
And 8.5 on Caesars.
I am pounding the under on that.
Look, if there's a Wisconsin fan listening this far into the podcast, may the Lord bless you and keep you, because I don't know why you're still here. But I just think that is such an astronomically high number for a year one Big Ten West coach.
Not just a year one Big Ten West coach. A year one Big Ten West coach that is changing like offensive philosophies, right?
And defensive philosophies. Yes. Jim Leonard's no longer there.
Like, are they a 4-3 now?
I think they're like a 3-3-5.
3-3-5,
essentially, okay. A 3-4, more or less. I think it's still – but look, Jim Leonard's not there.
Yeah.
So year one, Big Ten West. Okay, Fleck in year one won 5 games. Frost won 4. Brohm won 7. Ferentz won 1. Brett Bielema won 5 at Illinois, and Fitz won 4 at Northwestern. The last team to even hit this number in year one, can you guess?
In year one.
Mm-hmm.
Is it in the last 10 years? No.
Yes.
Really?
It's Paul Chryst in 2015,
sure,
when he took over and they
won. For Anderson.
Yeah, they won 9 games, 10 if you count the bowl game. Now, Wisconsin fans will say, see, Ryan, it can happen. And let me say this, what Paul Chryst inherited versus what Luke Fickell did, I think is very different. Very different to me. Like, offensively, Wisconsin hired Phil Longo from, I believe, North Carolina. A lot of excitement there. They brought in 3 transfer quarterbacks, probably going to be MU guy Tanner Mordecai, who, look, Graham Mertz sucks. Now, he sucked for Wisconsin. Apparently, Florida thinks he could be the Joe Burrow reclamation project, which wouldn't that be something if Florida can get Graham Mertz to look like the kid he did in the Army All-American game where he was the MVP.
Yeah.
But, like, Tanner Mordecai – from what I read from our Wisconsin 24/7 people, like, he had an okay spring and he had a horrible spring. He had 4 interceptions in the spring game. This isn't Ethan Kalyuk Manis going into year 3 in college football. Tanner Mordecai has played quite a bit of football, especially at SMU. So 4 interceptions, that would scare me. Like, I know there's other transfer options. Now, Braylon Allen returns. I'm always kind of the low man in the room on Braylon Allen because the 2 times that Minnesota's played Wisconsin since he's been there, it's always at the end of the season. Everybody knows that, Minnesota versus Wisconsin. He missed the game, and then he had 47 rushing yards. Like, I'm the last one to ask because the time I get to see him, it's, I don't know. I think he's a good player. I just, like, I know that there's people who think, you know, he's a top, like, look, is he one of the best running backs in the Big Ten West? 100%.
Yeah.
But where I struggle is, yes, they brought in some transfer receivers, but that offensive line was just not good.
Yeah.
Like, they brought in some transfers from Cincinnati. I think it's Joe Huber and Jake Renfro. Jake Renfro was an all-conference center for the Cincinnati Bearcats, where Luke Fickell was coaching. Huber started every game for them at right tackle. But, like, that offensive line hasn't been good for a couple years. And I want to see how AAC players transition to the Big Ten. Like, I like their offense. I think Phil Longo is a really good coach. And I think they'll be able to figure it out with them and Braylon Allen. It's defensively where I have my questions. Like, losing Jim Leonard stinks. Because, look, if you've ever listened to me, you know I'm a huge Jim Leonard Bobo. He's taken the year off to, number one, get paid by Wisconsin. And number two, I think he had back surgery to get right. And so he can have his pick of whatever NFL or college football job he wants. But you lose Nick Herbig and you lose Keanu Benton. Like, I think tremendous players. I think both were – I think Benton was taken in the second round of the NFL draft. Herbig should have gone in the top 100. I think he went in the 4th round. But then I look at who Wisconsin has projected as their starting 3 linemen up front. And they all somewhat played last season, I think, between like 100 and 250 snaps, and none of them have a PFF grade over 60. And I understand that – now, I'm going to butcher this name. And Luke, it's very U-esque. I think it's Mema Nanjamita. Like, he is tremendous, really, really good, one of the best linebackers in the Big Ten. But who are the playmakers if you're not going to get a lot from the guys up front? Like – how are you going to transition in year one without Jim Leonard? Without, I just don't think Wisconsin's defensive line is that good. I have some questions in the secondary as well. I know that Wisconsin is still feverishly looking for more corners. So I look at their schedule then, because I think the line should be 7.5, which once again, Wisconsin fans, I like your team. I just think you should be at 7.5, not 8.5 or 9.
Yeah.
Because, like, feasibly, if they're going to win 7 games, say.
Yeah.
You're on the road in Pullman going to Washington State, which Washington State beat them last year. And then you have Ohio State at home, which I don't give them much of a chance. And then it comes down to, does Illinois' front seven swallow up Wisconsin's offense? And then you have Wisconsin and Iowa.
I think where it comes down to me for here, Ryan, is if we really think that Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois are all in kind of their same tier, I think it's really unlikely that they get to 9 wins. Because the over-under was 9. That's just a story to me. I find it very unlikely that they win 9 games that way if they're all the same.
But the margin for error for them in year one is just so.
I'll say this again, which I've said before on this podcast. I understand why, you know, we set lines, but it does set artificial expectations that a team should win that much. But the reality is to promote action. Like, they set the line because they want people to slam the under and slam the over. Like, they want it even. It doesn't mean that's what they necessarily think is going to happen. And it sets this artificial expectation. I'm all for it for Wisconsin because I want their fan base to be absolutely ticked when they don't, if they don't win 9 games. And it's going to set a bad precedent for Luke Fickell. And it's hard to win in the Big Ten. Nebraska has learned that. They thought they'd come in and steamroll the Big Ten West or whatever the leader or legend division they were in before. They did well early, but since they got rid of Bo Pelini, it's been a struggle.
Yeah. Again, I look at this Wisconsin team and think 7.5 is where I would have them. Now, I understand that getting crossover games outside of Ohio State is Indiana and Rutgers, two very dreadful teams, I think they are the worst teams in the East.
Yes.
Teams with zero expectations, really bad teams. But it comes down to you thinking, like, Wisconsin's going to roll into TCF Bank Stadium and win there? And they certainly could. I would say Minnesota's going to be favored in that game. I don't think it's crazy that Illinois could be favored at home against Wisconsin. And then Iowa's obviously, I think, the favorite. So that's where I don't hate Wisconsin. I just hate their number. And to your point, I just feel like the artificial expectations for Wisconsin are just way too high for me in year one. Now, could they certainly hit the over on that and make me look like an idiot?
Yeah.
You're gosh darn right.
Yes.
And I'll eat it. But I just think 7.5 is where I would be, not 8.5 or 9. So I would take the under.
All right. So we're to Minnesota, right? I haven't looked.
What do you think the number on that? I think the last.
I got to think it would be the same.
Last 3 seasons, 19, 21, and 22, I believe it's been at 7.5.
So I personally would go 7.5. I could see them going 7, though. I think
6.5.
Okay. I guess I can see it, but I mean, it's, yeah. Okay.
Look, I get it. This is a Gopher football podcast. I understand that.
Yeah.
But if you're recapping the tiers now, how the way I see it, I think Iowa's in a tier by itself.
Yes.
At the top. And then there is a tier below them of Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Illinois. Tier below Nebraska, tier below Purdue, tier below Northwestern. And now I think those first 4 teams of Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Illinois all have a viable chance to win the West. I just think if you're going to put Minnesota at 6.5, I understand the schedule where you have Ohio State and Michigan on them. Minnesota's going to be, I would imagine, double-digit point underdogs in both of those games.
Yeah.
I understand you have to travel to Chapel Hill and take on what is likely going to be a first-round draft pick quarterback in Drake May. You also have to travel to Iowa City where you haven't won in 20 years.
Yeah.
So that's
– I mean,
those are the 4 games I think you're going to be not favored in.
Yeah.
And I think in every other game you will be favored. Which, if that's the case,
let's just go game by game.
Why wouldn't the line be at 7.5 for like the 5th straight year?
Yeah, let's go game by game. Wisconsin, you got to think that they're favored. Wisconsin. I can't read. Nebraska. You got to think they're favored, right?
Minnesota is, as we currently sit here in time, I believe is a 7.5 point home favorite.
And you said 65% chance that they win. I think if you're a favorite at 7.5 or 8,
You should win.
You should win. And I think your 65% is much better than the FPI, like 75%. Yeah. I mean, they're going to be a favorite against Eastern Michigan.
Eastern Michigan's a viable MAC team, but that's a team you should beat in year 7.
Yep. North Carolina, I think it's probably likely they're an underdog in this game.
I think the line I've seen there is like, I think it's North Carolina -5.
Okay. So, and that's fair. And then you've got Northwestern. You should be favored, even though you're on the road. Again, a reminder, if Eyes on Big is correct.
Northwestern is a dreadful team. Yeah. I can't see a world where Minnesota is not like an 11 or a 10.5 point dog.
And then you've got Louisiana, and you're
who
likely
just lost their best player on defense to the portal like 3 days
okay.
ago.
So first five games. Well, let's go through Michigan. Michigan, you're absolutely an underdog. Very unlikely you're going
to
win.
If you want to believe it.
Yeah.
If you want to believe, like, just if we're going straight on paper,
you're 4-2. So you got to win 3 games. When I look at the back half of this after the bye,
you get a bye week, and then you travel to Iowa City where you haven't won in 20 years. Say you lose there, you're 4-3.
Yeah.
But then you look at the final 4 of the 5 games. Michigan State should be a win. You're 5-3. Illinois, I know Minnesota lost to them last year, and I like Illinois a lot, but I like that Minnesota's at home. Say they win there, 6-3. And then you're on the road against Purdue, which I don't think Purdue's very good. And you're at 7, and then now you've already hit the over with going to lose probably to Ohio State, and then you get the Badgers at home for the Axe. Like, you could hit that 7, so you could be 7-4 going into the Wisconsin game.
Yeah, I think the argument...
That's why I think that number should be at 7 or 7.5,
yeah,
and not 6.5.
Yeah, there's something that they think... That they can get more action on.
I don't think, like, North Carolina is just this juggernaut to me. I've seen flex style of football go against ACC opponents, and I know that Drake May is probably going to be the best quarterback Minnesota has faced in years.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think it's crazy to think Minnesota wins that game, say, I don't know, 35% of the time.
And here's the reality. A lot can change between now and week one against Nebraska, right? But in the end, yeah, I think that the number, it doesn't reconcile for me.
Right. If, like, Ethan Kaliakmanis goes down, knock on wood, like, yeah, 6.5 or 6 is probably the right number because that changes everything exponentially. But as we sit here in time, like, I feel good enough that I would say 7 or 7.5 is the number I would put on it instead of 6.5. Now, I mean, I've also been the one screaming at you the last 4 years to take the over on Minnesota at 7.5, and they've hit the over on all those. So I'm also the one here sitting telling you I would take the over on 6.5.
Yeah.
Now, if it was at 7.5, I would tell you I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
I'm not sure I'd touch it with 7, but with 6.5.
Seven or 7.5, I don't know that I would touch it.
Yeah,
I agree. But 6.5, if you can find it, I think is probably where I'm at. Now, we've spent a lot of time talking about why we like Minnesota and whatnot, but that's where when these lines came out, and I said it a little bit on Twitter, and I was just like, I don't understand how Wisconsin is a full, say, you know, 1.5 games ahead of Iowa. To me, that's
wild. The egregious part. I'm with
that
you.
That is why I'm upset. Part. Like, Minnesota at 6.5, whatever. Like, it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's egregious. I just think Iowa's too low. Like I said, I think Iowa's in a mini tier by themselves. I think they are.
Yes.
If you had to put odds on it, you know, 35-40%. And then you could put Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, 20-25% to win too.
Yeah.
Now, I also understand, like, if you're listening to this, you might be thinking, Brian, you're probably the high man on Illinois of everybody, which I might be. I don't know. But I think those four teams, it wouldn't shock me. Like, nothing would shock me. Like, if Nebraska won the West, that would shock me.
But here's the thing.
Wisconsin being a full 1.5 games better than any other team in the West in year 1 of Luke Fickell, to me, is just not right.
the thing for me, and we can close on this thought, is that crazy things have happened. I don't think anybody expected Illinois to be as good as they were last year. Could Nebraska be or Purdue be? Sure. But it's first year coaches. You know, I don't know how they've been able to turn over their roster. It just doesn't seem likely. And then the same, but the same argument can be applied to Fickell. They've lost a lot. I know they've been able to bring in like four quarterbacks. Maybe they found the one. It just doesn't seem likely, especially with the philosophy changes in the end.
That's where I'm at. I don't question the Wisconsin offense. I think Phil Longo is going to figure it out. And I understand, like, Luke Fickell has a long history. Like, I understand that's why he was waiting for a while for Ohio State and Michigan, because he's that good of a coach. But in year one, I want to know who are going to be the defensive playmakers that are going to be able to help them.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing. That's where I'm at.
All right. So we want to thank everybody for listening again. Make sure, if it's May 13th, it's going to be past May 13th, but make sure you get to homefieldapparel.com. Check out the Minnesota line. Use your code GGR. Save 10% on your order. You know, be ready for this fall, because you're going to need some new apparel to look your best at the tailgate. Ryan, any parting words?
I don't hate Wisconsin. I don't love Iowa, but I think this is probably, on paper, as we sit here in May, going to be one of my favorite years to cover the Big Ten West, because I think there's going to be so much ambiguity.
It's going to be wild again, and it was wild last year, Ryan. That's the thing.
And it's the fourth straight year Wisconsin is the favorite via Vegas, and the previous 3 years they didn't want it. I don't think they win it this fall, but we will see what it all looks like in about 3.5 months when we all start to get
together. Yeah, and if there's one thing that you should be watching for, can Northwestern beat a Big Ten team at home this year for this coming senior class? That is the thing to watch for. Again, I want to thank you all for listening. Again, we want to thank Homefield for making this possible. Have a great
Mother's Day weekend.
Mother's Day weekend.